Hello.
Hi, welcome back.
Mysteries.
Murders.
Monsters.
And your moms.
Is the name of the podcast that you're currently listening to.
Yeah.
And I'm Julia.
I can't. Every time. I'm going to laugh. I am Nicole, at least today. That's who I am. Some days I'm not sure.
We should, figure out the, Frenchy sounding sound of your name. Nicola. Now, right. That sounds Italian.
This is my whole family's on a play date today. This is my play date.
Oh, nice.
My husband's play date later is to help Julie's husband throw stuff away.
Throw shit in a dumpster.
My daughter has a legit play date, so she's very excited. So, happy Sunday play date.
Sunday play date.
I was like, I don't have a play date. And Bisa's like, you're going to one right now. And I'm like, yeah, I guess it kind
of
is.
Good call. Right. Touché, mon frère.
All right. So we're going to jump right in today. Oh my gosh. So I'm an asshole because I picked this story.
Oh God, why?
Because it takes place, it's about a kid that goes missing at a fair, just in time for fair season.
Well,
I know.
It's also a warning to parents out there.
I don't really think the fair had anything to do with it, but we'll just go through this.
That's fair.
That's fair.
That's fair.
Oh, anyway, so yeah, my title, Fear at the Fair, which makes it sound way...
It does. It sounds like a horror movie.
I know. That's why
a Lifetime movie.
Oh, this could definitely be a Lifetime movie, honestly.
It probably is.
I have to hold the paper like this in the light because I can't see, because I need to make an eye doctor appointment.
Old.
All right. So, it's 1992. Oh my God. 1992.
Nice.
I'm the same age as this person. I keep picking cases that I'm the same or very close to age.
I just identify
of these people
with them
that are going missing. So apparently,
oh my gosh,
I don't know. And this was not on purpose. The last one I did because I really I saw the picture and I knew she was a 90s. I wore all of those same things.
Oh my God. Wait, time out. Speaking of 90s. I walked through Walmart yesterday to go to the back, and I went through the women's section, and oh my God, it's like a Clueless fucking reunion.
I know.
Do you remember the half white baby tops with the vests built into them?
No, I can't.
Yeah, that's
do this
happening
again.
That's happening again.
I'm not doing it. I don't ever do any. I don't know why I say that. I always I change to the trends.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm too
I could
old
never
for that.
Wear even back then. I couldn't wear the baby doll tees because I'm too sweaty.
I used to wear them, but I played softball and my right arm was bigger than my left arm, and I would break out the the stitching on the right arm on the really short baby doll tees. I was such a beast, yes, and I would rip them, and I would be so mad about it. And now looking back on it, it's hilarious. It's the funniest thing ever. I'm like,
I was just sweaty.
I
couldn't. I needed things that weren't white and stuck to my armpits because I just sweated through them.
Well, and it was gross. We all walked around with shirts that stopped right in the middle of our armpits, and everybody was sweat. We were all teenagers. We were sweaty. Yeah. It was
or
gross.
You saw white rolled deodorant on everything.
Oh God, yeah, it was disgusting.
The 90s weren't really cool in the 90s, guys. I don't know why you're trying to bring it back. Yeah. Anyway.
So we're going to go back to the 90s, but for other reasons. So, all right. So we're in the small town of in Washington State called Puyallup. I'm sorry, folks in Puyallup. I'm sure I'm saying this wrong. I even phonetically wrote it out because I made Google tell me how to say it three times this morning.
Puyallup.
It's Pew. Puyallup. Puyallup.
Puyallup.
Puyallup.
Just Puyallup. Right. Up.
So the biggest thing that happens in this town, basically, and I meant to look this up. The biggest thing that happens in this town is they have a fair twice a year.
That's fair.
They have a
shit.
They have a spring one and a fall one, which is kind of interesting, right?
Yeah.
But the town population is about 25,000 people, just to which I wanted to look up a town around here that's similar to that, but I didn't. So it's not here. I can tell you that much. So Misty Copsey was born in 1978. Her parents basically got divorced right after she was born, and for all
and it was her fault. I'm just kidding.
Obviously, no. But for most, I would say that she just, for our purposes, she spent most of her time with her mom.
Yeah. Okay.
In the things that I read, her dad doesn't come up at all until later on, and it's not really even that relevant. So I just don't really know anything. His name was Buck, and her mom's name was Diana. Diana Smith and Buck Copsey. But he's not really in the picture. So what I'm getting at is Misty's living with her mom, basically. It's the two of them, and she was a good student. She likes sports. She had a lot of friends, and her best friend was named Trina, and Trina Bavard, and she called, and I thought this was cute, she called Trina Bean, and Trina called Misty Bunyan. They had like stupid nicknames for each other.
It's weird.
Yeah. I know.
But
anyway.
She had a bunion on her foot and that's what their nickname
came from?
It's
so weird.
Just get that looked at.
So when they first, like, she grew up living in this like trailer park called Green Meadows with her mom. And at some point in like early 1992, they moved to a duplex to kind of like upgrade in a town called Spanaway, which is just a little up the road from where she was before. But she
moving
did.
Moving on up.
Yeah, and she did keep in touch with her friends from there, which becomes relevant to this story, and I'll talk about one of them in a second. But the reason I say all this is because what happens later is there's a lot of question about her mom and their relationship. And from everything I read, and I'll get into it, but everything I read, and I read a couple different things and I listened to a couple podcasts, I think they had a good relationship. I think it's easy because she's a single mom kind of struggling to, and like, we'll talk about it. She did have a little bit of an alcohol problem, but nothing to like keep her from working or
what parent in the 90s didn't.
Didn't, I know. So like, but seriously, like, it's just kind of like, a lot of people make a big deal about like, you know, her maybe wanting to be a runaway. And,
I
don't get that from what I've read. So anyway, there she keeps in touch with these friends, though, from the trailer park, including this one boy who's older than her, like a lot older. He's 18 and she is 78, 80, that's 10, what, 14? I can't math.
Yeah,
14.
Enough.
So like he's a good bit older than her. And his name is Ruben Schmidt. But, you know, he also has a car. Oh, yeah, he's 4 years older than her. So, yeah, I was right, 14. He has a car, which, you know, back then was really a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, if you knew a friend with a car, and it was a green 1974 Chevy Nova.
Oh, sweet.
Right? So anyway, but he, like, has this kind of unhealthy relationship with her, and he told her one time her mom overheard a phone call where he was like, I get horny just looking at you. And her mom was like, yo, you're not allowed to talk to him anymore.
Oh, my
God. He's 4 years older than you. Like, no. He's practically, like, he's 18. He's an adult.
He needs to calm down.
Yeah, right. But Ruben and, like, but Misty didn't really, it wasn't, like, some unrequited love thing where, she, like, you know, like, she was being torn away from him. She really just wasn't interested in him.
Yeah.
She just kind of knew him from the trailer park and they were friends. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But even, like, if you, like, they go back and look and, like, according to her mom, according to all her friends, like, she didn't have, this, like, they didn't run off together or some stupid thing like that. All right, so... Like I said, the relationship between mom and daughter was pretty much what you'd expect. But one of the things that also, to me, I think is really important is that Diana worked as a, like, overnight caregiver to an elderly woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she was gone a lot. So Misty had a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
And being a 14-year-old girl, that was probably pretty awesome. And, you know, reports say that her mom had just bought her, like, a bunch of new clothes and a stereo. You know, so like they had moved to this new house, like, she was pretty happy.
Yeah.
You know, like things were pretty good. And I'm sure as any dramatic 14-year-old, there was things in your life that are, oh my God.
But, yeah, well, yeah.
But nothing dramatic that would make you go to the extreme.
That's suspicious. Yeah.
So, all right. So let's talk about the fair. So it's fair time. It's the fall fair. It's in September. And Misty convinces her mom that she's going to go to the fair without an adult. And she's going to go with her best friend, Trina. And I saw different reports on this, but the one report said, so I'll go with the one that Diana drove them there. They just had to find a ride back home.
Oh.
And the plan that Misty told her was that they were going to take the bus back home. But Diana did do something that's a little shady. She told Trina's parents that she was giving them a ride back home.
Yeah.
Which, like...
Yeah.
But she wanted to be the cool mom and, like, you know, but she couldn't because she was going to be taking care of this elderly woman all day. Yeah. So, yeah, don't be the cool parent for stuff like that.
That's I've been cool. So pissed.
I know. But it's okay. Trina's fine. And Trina lies too, so it all comes back around. Like, it's kind of funny, the story progressed, and I think that's why I ended up doing it, because as I kept reading and I was listening to this one podcast, I'm like, oh my god,
you're like, what the
and
fuck?
That happened. It's like, it's so crazy. So
it was like, and then
anyway, so they are supposed to take the 840 bus back home, and it'll take her right to her town, to Spanaway, where she lives.
Okay.
So they missed the bus because 14.
Yeah.
I'm not even surprised. Well, Trina says, and this is what she reports afterwards, and this is what people think for a long time, is that she decided her town was the other direction and it was close enough that she felt like she could walk. Now, Misty is not close enough that she can walk.
Right.
So the story is that Trina leaves and walks, and Misty's going to go, you know, find a ride. So she calls her mom, which, I mean, like, she's
makes
not...
Makes sense, yeah.
She calls her mom, and her mom's, like, super pissed, but, like, I can't leave. You're going to need to find a ride. Like, you're going to need to call your friends, you know. I mean, like, you know, it's the 90s. It's not even, like...
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. She's on a payphone, right?
Right,
calling
yeah.
her mom or calling people. So well, she said she was going to call Ruben. And her mom's like, no, don't call Ruben.
Well,
find someone else.
Why couldn't she go back to Trina's house?
That was what I was wondering when I was reading this. Like, if this happened.
And, like, get her parents to give her a ride home.
Right.
It's like, don't ever leave your girlfriends behind.
Right. And, like,
oh,
well,
my God.
And, I mean, I guess Trina didn't want to get in trouble because she's going to act like she got dropped off, right? But, and, like, I'm going to give it away because I can't wait. But... No,
let's no, just no, put no, a pin keep in going.
It.
Sorry.
I'm gonna
keep going.
Pin it.
Keep going. I'll
I'm
stop.
Pin it. Pin it.
Like, I'm invested.
Like
I need
they do
to know.
In red handed. It's so funny. Okay, so Diana says, when you find your ride, call me.
Okay.
Like, when you figure out what you're doing, call me.
Okay.
Like, I'm still here. You can call me. Like, you know.
Oh my God.
And she gets home. Diana gets home. And, like, she never gets the call. She's like, okay, maybe she just, you know, got a ride and,
yeah.
you know, she never gets a call. She gets home and she's expecting her to be there. I guess it's like the way it read, and I can't tell exactly when she comes home, but it's like not quite morning. So like maybe like
probably
she
four
kind
or
of
five
expected.
In the morning.
Yeah, she expected her to see like pass, like kind of passed out on the couch watching a movie
right.
type situation.
Yeah.
Not home. So she immediately starts calling everyone, right? She's calling all around to see if anyone knows.
Yeah.
Who gave her a ride
yeah.
that night. And nobody knows. She did call Ruben. I guess she'll talk to him in a minute. She calls 911. And they tell her that she has to wait 30 days to report her
what?
Missing.
That's so stupid.
We'll get into all of that in a minute. Because that's the really shitty part about this case. Anyway, so she's looking. She goes to Trina's house. Like, she's trying to figure out where she is. She goes to the Pierce County Sheriff's Department to, you know, who tells her that the 30-day thing isn't
oh
true.
God.
Because, obviously, 30 days.
Yeah.
So, the problem is, the other police department, Puglia, basically was the one that blew her off. They were like,
yeah.
So Pierce County, so, and this becomes jurisdictional. Pierce County is where she went missing from.
Yeah.
The problem is Puglia's basically like, she's a runaway.
What?
And blah, blah, blah. So.
It sounds like
so there's nothing they can, like, there's nobody in the police, like, Pierce County has seemed like they were willing to help, but they can't really jurisdictionally do any, like,
right.
So it's a mess. Anyway, so Misty finally gets in touch with Trina, right? So Trina's like, you know, told her the story that I told you,
mm-hmm.
that she hasn't seen her, that I left to walk home. Okay. So she tries to call Ruben again. And I guess I must have missed it. When she first talks to Ruben,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I missed this. She calls Ruben the first time. She calls him almost immediately. And he answers and he tells her that he didn't have any gas. She did call him for a ride, but mm-hmm. he didn't have gas to pick her up.
Okay.
So, like, okay.
All right.
So she calls Ruben again and his roommate answers. And this is significant. And we meet him again. He said he had, in fact, gone out that night with his uncle to pick up Misty. So Ruben is like at the top of Diana's list. And I'm going to be honest, Ruben never leaves the top of Diana's list.
Yeah.
And from my opinion, for good reason.
Yeah.
So she tracks Ruben down, and you can just like, I can like vision this all happening, right? Like, so she tracks Ruben down like, yo, your roommate just said this.
Yeah.
And Ruben's like, no, no, my uncle and I did go to a party, but we didn't go pick up Misty.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. And I don't know anything about the uncle, and I couldn't find anything about the uncle. Like, I would assume at some point police investigate the uncle, but here's the thing. They don't really investigate anything for quite some time, so it's not that surprising. But you got, like I said, you don't, that story, so your story just changed 3 times.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. In less than 24 hours.
Exactly. So she's, like, out putting up flyers, told all of her friends, like, hey, if you hear from her, she's not in trouble.
Yes.
Tell her to call me, you know, like, right. I can, I feel like, I, like you said, it's a Lifetime movie. Right?
So the mom's disheveled, wearing, like, right. sweatpants. And
she's like, losing it. So she's out, so she tracks down the bus driver, which I thought, like, she's the only one doing anything. She tracks down the bus driver, and he said that he did see her, and he told her to catch another bus because he, like, that was the last bus to Spanaway.
Yeah.
The next bus was to Tacoma, and he, like, he told her that she could, like, go to Tacoma and then go back to Spanaway, but it would have been, like, a whole thing, you know?
Jesus.
And you can see her probably being 14 and overwhelmed by that.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so at this point, she's been missing for, like, a week.
Oh, God.
And they finally let her file a missing persons report.
Jesus Christ.
With the Puglia Police Department, okay, on September 23rd, 6 days, basically. But they still think she's a runaway. And Sergeant Herm Carver is a dick.
Oh, my
God.
I'm
just going to say it. He would basically do a small investigation around the fairgrounds and blah, blah, blah. And so they don't find anything. So immediately he starts looking into the mom, which I don't know why this has anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
But he starts looking into her. So she's got a few DUIs on her record. And she got convicted of welfare fraud. Basically, she was getting food stamps when she was working.
Oh, my God.
And pleaded guilty to just make it go away.
Oh, my God.
It was like she pleaded guilty for a deferred sentence.
Right.
You know.
A big fucking deal at the end of the day.
She was trying to feed her kid, you know.
Yeah.
Terrible mother she is. And then they find this other thing. So, and I didn't tell you about it. I saved it. Basically, she finds this other thing that... Okay. She finds this other thing where a couple, maybe like a month or so before this all happened, Diana reported Misty missing.
Oh.
But it was a mistake.
Oh.
Basically. And, you know, we could speculate that maybe she was like the alcohol thing, but like basically Misty was home. She just couldn't find her in the house, and like she was passed out like under the covers type situation.
Oh my God.
And she was so embarrassed that she never called the police department to like to take it away.
Yeah.
And you know what? She made a dumb mistake.
Yeah.
But this sends freaking red flags up the, you know, old Herm's like, oh, this woman.
Yeah.
Basically. And at that point, he says that, like, it furthers his suspicion that she's a runaway. So then they go and talk to some kids at school, which I don't know why, like, apparently he goes with her, like, the mom, to the school.
Creepy.
And there's been rumors, because it's freaking high school.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Eighth graders. Oh, my gosh. So one of them claimed to have gotten a phone call from Misty, who said she was safe and sound in Olympia, and another one claimed to have seen her at the Color Me Bad concert. I left that part in. I probably plagiarized the fuck out
so
of that.
Great.
Whoever I plagiarized that from, it was worth it. September 21st, four days after her disappearance at the Color Me Bad concert.
Oh my God.
I'm dead. Anyway.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
But this was the final straw. This is where he was like, he wouldn't even add her to the missing persons database.
Wow.
He put her in as a runaway, and he gets on the radio the next day to say that Misty Copsey, who was referred to as a missing child by local media, was actually a runaway. He also claimed that her mother knew where she was and that she was safe and sound. Like, this guy makes me so angry. But anyway, years later, one of these eighth grade girls is like, I made that up. Of course you did, because you're eighth grade girls. And I don't mean anything by it, but, like, you know, they don't think it's serious. They probably think she ran away too, if we're being honest, right? They're probably like, oh yeah, she ran away. Like,
oh my God.
Because it's easier to think that, right? Than like something bad happened. So everything's frozen. And like the police go out and take the flyers down. Like they're like, yeah, it's crazy. So I got to jump to the next character in this story because this story has a new character.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
Okay. So just about this same time, there are a bunch of serial murders happening in this area.
What? And nobody thought about that?
We will later go on to call them the Green River
murders.
Okay. The Green River Killer. And they aren't similar because he's killing prostitutes.
I see.
Like,
oh, okay.
That was very much his,
like a Jack the Ripper type.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Green River case, like, that's like a 20-part podcast. But, like, like, this is not, they're not, like, I'm not going to say, like, her going missing. And, I mean, like, now this guy tries to go there, but I can totally understand why no police would immediately be like, oh, it's the serial killer.
It's this one.
Yeah.
Right there. All right.
Okay, so there's this guy. His name is, why is his name not the first thing on my thing? Bober is his last name. The fuck is his first name? How did I not write down his first name?
Just refer to him as Bober.
Well, Bober.
Oh, it says Butt Bober.
Butt Bober.
Butt Bober.
Oh my God. Corey. Oh my God. Ugh. Corey Bober.
Okay.
Corey Bober. This is like, I can't even, like, the characters in this. Mm-hmm. It's not nice to say because, like, there's a girl in the middle of all of this that went missing. But,
right.
Like,
yeah.
He's like a citizen detective.
Oh, I love it.
So he's like...
And I can picture it.
...crusading to find these fucking green... Like, these killer... Like, these murders.
Yeah, yeah.
He's obsessed. And he basically, like, is a like a small-time pot dealer and then, like, investigating these crimes.
Plot twist. He did it.
Well, somebody will think that later.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's him. But he's just, like, he's obsessed. And he drives the police crazy, right? He's always up their ass about every little thing. And he's just going to find, like, since 1984, he's been obsessed with this. So, like, he's, like, it's crazy.
He's, like, 10 years
like,
into it.
He sells enough pot to stay alive and investigate this. Like,
I mean,
it's
fair
so
enough.
Crazy.
Fair enough.
So the police basically cannot stand this guy. Like, he's... And I get it. He's probably really freaking annoying.
Right.
So, but he saw a new pattern emerging where two teenage girls from around Pouliup had been killed. One was a 15-year-old named Kim DeLange, and the other one, and that was in 1988. And then the other one was Anna Chebetnoy, who was 14 years old, and that was in 1990. So, like, prior to Misty, like...
Right, yeah, yeah.
But he sees... He's, like, so OCD, he sees, like, a pattern. 2 years and 1 month separate the prior two murders.
Okay.
So, in his mind, the next one's going to happen, and he warns police, and they say he never does. But then... well, I'll move on to that in a second, but I have to mention one other thing really quick. He also has a suspect. He thinks he knows who the Green River Killer is.
And it's the cop.
No. Okay. It's this guy named Randy Achziger. I'm going to say it over and over again until it sounds right. Doesn't sound right at all. But anyway, this is his guy. He thinks Randy is the guy that did it. He thinks Randy killed these girls. And he thinks the next one is going to be, you know...
The
girl.
Yeah.
Is going to be Misty. Or he thinks it is her. So what... Anyway, so I have to go back a minute. The reason he thinks this Achziger is the one is he heard this from a drunk Auburn police captain.
Oh, okay.
That revealed, like, a vital clue to the case, you know? And so basically, Bober's just out there trying to convince everyone that this is true.
Yeah.
And, like, to his credit, like, he doesn't... He investigates. Like, he's not just... And you'll see in a minute, like, he doesn't just, I mean, we didn't have the internet like we do now, so, like, to say, like, he's just sitting there, like, typing away. Yeah. You know, he's actually out there, you know, and he's like recording this guy. He gets his ex-girlfriend to try and record phone calls. Like, he's stalking this dude, basically. Wow. Which isn't cool. Don't do that. Yeah. Even if you do think they're a serial killer. Like, you should not do that. But, so everyone's kind of had enough. And, like I said, he sends this warning, right? And they're going to, he says another girl is going to be murdered and found along Highway 410. That's where the prior victims were discovered. So, when he finds out about the missing girl, Misty, he's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh my God, is this Oxinger? This is it. The uncle?
No.
Oh. Never mind.
No. I don't know anything about the uncle. The uncle's just like...
That's what I mean. Yeah. Maybe that's why we don't know, because he's a fucking uncle.
Well, I think it's because... I think it's because Ruben is where eventually people do figure out that, like, we should be looking at this guy.
Okay, sorry.
But that's okay. Basically, so Corey Bober contacts Diana and is like, I know what happened to your daughter. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, very Lifetime movie of me there for a second. And he just, like, he's telling her his whole spiel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And think about it from her perspective.
Poor mom.
Right? Because from her perspective, coming from him, if you believe him, then your daughter's dead.
Yeah.
Not missing.
Right.
Oh, my God. So, like, that's a really hard thing. But she's also, like, desperate for someone to pay attention to her case because the police are ignoring her. So, her and Bober have this back and forth for years of, like, yes, we're helping each other. And then also, like, yo, dude, like, get the fuck away. You know, and she's struggling.
There's some weird sexual tension.
Which, if it was a Lifetime movie, there definitely would be. But she's struggling, you know, like, her daughter's missing. No one's listening to her.
Yeah.
You know, she's definitely trying not to, like, slip back into the bottle kind of situation. Right. Like, she's having a rough time of things. And police are so fed up with this Bober guy that they are setting up a freaking drug bust on him. So he gets arrested. And we'll get back to that in a little bit, but they just basically, I think they, like, they arrest him because they want to just get him out of their way. Like, you need to stop. And the police, like I said, they kind of, like, really manipulate the situation with Diana and him. Like, they get him to, they talk her into filing a restraining order against him.
Oh my God.
In return for putting her on the missing persons list.
All right, fair enough.
But also, like, what kind of fucked up shit is that?
Yeah.
How about you just do your job?
What's the matter? Is he getting too close to the truth?
Right.
Because that would be a line in the Lifetime movie. I know.
It's so true. But she drops the restraining order because she's like, this is crazy. Like, you know.
Right.
He's kind of nuts, this kid. Like, this Corey guy is not. I'm sure he's a
He's a cracked. He's a cracked nut somewhere.
Yeah, but, like, he also is interested in helping her.
Yeah.
And, like I said, she's still stuck on Ruben. She's never not thought Ruben's involved somehow. Right. But, of course, Corey Bober doesn't agree with her because he's trying to find, you know, the green killer. Yeah. Exactly. And that's the other thing I think that's significant. You know, there's a lot that happens, and some of it's good, but they really are in two different, like,
lanes.
Yeah. Exactly. He's trying to prove something that's different than what she is needing, which is someone to look for her daughter.
Yeah.
So it took, so one of the things that did happen, which is pretty cool, is Bober is like, he's like a freaking hound dog, and he just keeps going after the medical examiner's office and finally found out where the other two victims had been found, specifically on Highway 410, to get the exact location.
Yeah.
So they would go out and have search parties looking. Oh. Like,
good for him, though.
Yeah, mile marker 30, Highway 410. And, like, and with, you know, with Diana, like, they go out and look. And I'm like, okay, well, somebody's looking. Like, doing that's something. Cool. And on December 2nd, Pierce County, kind of, like, again, jurisdictional weirdness, but Pierce County does declare her missing under suspicious circumstances at this point.
Well, that's good.
Diana tries to kill herself.
Oh.
In December over the holidays, but she doesn't. She's okay. But, like, I mention it not to, like, shame her, but I just feel so bad for the way that she's, like, she's struggled, you can tell, in her life.
Right.
And she was doing what she had to for her kid and making things. And, yeah, she made a few bad decisions, But it's like, fine. What Nobody's parent perfect. Doesn't? Like, yeah. Shit. I just felt so, I felt for her the and whole time I Christmas. Did this story.
Yeah.
So anyway. So there's this new, so this other detective called Jim Doyon. And he is from King County. And he's actually investigating the Green River Killer. Okay. And he kind of gets pulled into this case because of like some of the similarities from those girls. Now, that no one's convinced that the Green River Killer killed those other two girls.
Right. But I think it's separate.
They do, but it's still like kind of connected enough that he's like, well, we've been at this. And if you know anything about the Green River Killer case, like they're at this for years trying to solve this case. Mm-hmm. So like I'm feeling like that, you know, you're going to take any chance you can to kind of find a new lead. Right. Okay, let's try something else because nothing else is working.
Right.
So he kind of gets involved and they go on TV with, it's him and Diana and even Trina, like they go on TV to try and bring some attention to these pulley up girl cases, basically. And some tips come in, you know, like they do on TV, like you call in your tips. Yeah. And this woman, a woman claims she saw Misty walking down Meridian, the main street in Puyallup, past the fairgrounds, passing a 7-Eleven that lies across the street. And this sighting took place around 10 o'clock rather than 9 o'clock, which is when she got off the phone.
Right. That's like a whole hour.
So like, yeah. So she's still in that area at that time. So it changes their timeline a little bit for the disappearance. But of course, Puyallup or Pierce County never follow up with this woman.
Like, is there no camera footage? 7-Eleven does not have cameras?
Probably, but they never follow up because they still just think she's a runaway.
Ugh.
I know. And I think they're probably just mad because this other detective is helping them.
Whatever. They've been butt asses whole time.
I know. So 4 months after, 4 months after she goes missing, January 10th, 1993. 5 blocks from where Misty was last seen, at approximately 2 o'clock in the morning, a girl is walking down that same street in Puyallup and a red Camaro pulls up. There's a man inside and he begins calling to her, basically making like lewd jokes, like and she ignores him. And this guy's name is Robert Leslie Hickey. Just people in the names, man. But he gets out, he tries to force her into the car. And he does, and he takes her to a nearby area, and he rapes her.
Oh, God.
But he, basically drops her off at a ravine and, pushes her, and she falls, but it doesn't kill her. He thinks it will, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
And she survived, and he's later convicted, which is great.
Yeah.
Of course, he'd only serve 7 years, because rape isn't really a crime.
Right.
Especially in the 90s.
Especially now.
But they look into this to see if there's any link between the two, and they don't really find anything, but he is listed as a suspect, and just to say that, he does get out and go, and he rapes someone else.
Cause, of course,
you know,
he does.
That's what happens.
Of course he does.
But anyway, I digress. Moving back to the case. So Bober's like, we've been searching this area, right? I told you about the searches. This is all still, this is all happening, intertwined. He goes back to the medical examiner and he's like, listen, something's wrong. And they're on the wrong side of the highway.
Oh my God.
So.
Oh my God.
So they're going to do another search. It's February. They're going to go back out to this right side where they think it's going to be. And this time, and they do the thing about Bober, and I get why the police are annoyed. Every time he's going to do something like this, he goes to the media and gets everybody all hyped up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's kind of annoying.
Yeah. So and there was another incident that I didn't include it because it just...
Right. No, more, but it's still annoying. Whatever.
So anyway, they find jeans. They find her jeans. And it's definitely her jeans because she had borrowed her mom's jeans. Oh. And I didn't put the description in, but they were those stonewashed baggy ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
very
90s.
Very wanted to wear these super cool jeans, right?
Okay. Haven't quite escaped the 80s, but we're in the 90s jeans.
Yes. And at this point, Diana is feeling terrible, but she also is like, kind of, you know, feeling a little vindicated to the police, like, yo, I told you something was wrong this whole time.
Right.
And this isn't far. Like, where they find this stuff is not far from, like, you know, where she went missing. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't have been that crazy. Like, if you would have been doing a proper search,
you would have probably
found this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this guy went to the medical examiner, found the location, went and found stuff. No. Yeah. And police are going to go on to say that, well, maybe they planted it. I'm like, oh my God, maybe you just didn't do anything.
You're just a douche and you're bad at your job.
But they found jeans, a pair of socks, and underwear that may or may not have been the articles of clothing she was wearing on the night she left. But the jeans definitely were. So, mm-hmm. But they were hers. The mom confirms they're hers. So this Detective Doyen from King County actually gets put in charge of the investigation at this point because he's got the bigger case, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said that, like, hold on, my brain just stopped working.
Brain
this case
fart.
Is so crazy.
Brain fart.
Basically, this guy's like, okay, they were found in a way that, like, he doesn't think that somebody would have put them there recently.
Okay.
Because, like, they're under dirt. They're, like, covered.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, Sergeant Herm, our friend, immediately suspects the two of them.
Oh, my God.
Like his first thing is, like, you know. So this guy, the actual detective that's awesome, is like, you know, listen, like, the way that they are, like, he looked at it. He was careful. This other guy's like, oh, it's them. They did it, you know. But they go out with, like, police dogs and helicopter for thermal imaging. Like, they really, like, do an actual search for the first time. And the funny thing is, people do bring in tips, but because they bring them into Carver, nobody ever follows up on them.
Oh, my God.
So, like, one of their friends said that, you know, Ruben actually did hang out with Misty more than people were saying.
Oh.
Like, that when Mom was away, Ruben would come over.
Oh.
And, okay, like, that sucks. But, like, why aren't you looking into this?
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to the Corey Bober guy. He gets his jail sentence, and he thought he was, like, helping out so he'd get a light sentence, and he doesn't. He has, like, I don't know, 4 months, 4 years, four years? I don't know. It
Jesus
doesn't matter.
Jesus Christ, for marijuana? Oh,
yeah.
God.
Anyway, so at this point, Doyen's actually, like talking to, 4 months. Four months.
All right.
So this guy's talking to people, right? He's like, okay, we need to start interviewing some people. So he talks to Trina, and he shows her the picture of the jeans, you know, and she kind of, like, freaks out. And then she kind of, like, fesses up and says the original plan was to get a ride from Ruben.
Oh, no.
But he said he couldn't give them a ride, like, you know, like, yeah. He said.
Yeah.
He even, like, I guess Misty was even telling him how to get in the house and get money, like, her house, like, to steal money so he could get gas.
Oh, my God.
And Trina reveals that she didn't really trust Ruben, was already planning on not getting a ride if he came.
Yeah.
Okay, so her story changes again, but at least someone's actually talking to her for real about this and not just, like, And then the rest of their story, basically, like, the rest of what she says at that point matches up with everything that had already, like, been provided to police at this point. Again, she gets an America's Most Wanted segment, and then more tips come in. And, you know, Carver basically still has control over the case, and he, like, because Doyen's investigating, like, and I had to think about this. I'm like, why is he still in charge? I thought the other guy is, but he's not. He's in charge of the Green River Killer case.
Right, yeah.
Carver's still in charge of Misty's specific
report.
Yeah. So, like, that's why we keep having these, like, one guy's doing all this stuff, and this guy's like, yeah, no. And he's basically, at this point, his main goal is to, like, try to lead, like, he's trying to, like, basically get Bober out of the, Corey Bober out of, like, the whole thing. Like, he's, like, trying to kind of, like, pin things on him. Like, because so he's just annoying, and yeah. I get it. But at this point, he finally reluctantly decides to look into Ruben.
Oh, God.
Finally. Like, finally decides yeah, to look finally. Into Ruben. Like, all of this time, like, you're going, like, he's the first thing you would have looked at.
You would think.
So he goes and visits the restaurant that he works at called Adam's Rib. Adam's Ribs. I'm sorry, Adam's Ribs.
Well, I know the singular rib is funny.
Yeah, but I'm even still like
Adam's Rib.
And the owner is Frank Rodriguez, who's obviously not Adam. So he basically said that he had said Ruben had said some suspicious things about Misty after she disappeared.
Oh.
Like that he knew where she was buried, and that he told another coworker or friend that the where they were investigating, they were off by about 6.5 miles.
What?
So then Ruben's question, and he said that he said those things to get people off his back, which I'm like, why are they on your back about that? Exactly. Yeah. And he again says that he didn't pick them up because he didn't have gas. But again, there is a note in that time period that Ruben says he claims that he suffered from blackouts.
Oh, okay.
Periods of time where he loses all recollection. And he apparently had one immediately after Misty called him.
Weird. Isn't such that good funny? Timing. What are the odds?
So,
what are the odds? Bless you. You good? Nope. One more. Had you. Bless you.
I'm good now. Ugh.
Thank Those you. Are cute sneezes.
I know.
It's Mine are ridiculous. Just like monstrous.
It's mostly just to keep me from peeing myself.
That's fair.
All right. Wait till you get old, friends.
All right. Yeah.
So Ruben Schmidt's basically like, I don't even know where I was because I blacked out. And
so ridiculous.
He says he wakes up the next morning at his grandmother's house.
But he didn't have gas.
But he doesn't remember how he got there. Exact. But he doesn't have gas.
But you don't have gas. How'd you get there?
Which is a farm, like, not close by.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know how he got there. And he was broke and he didn't have any money. But he's at this farm.
And he didn't have gas in his car to go anywhere.
But what his grandmother's farm is close to is Highway 410 where the jeans were found.
Uh-oh.
But you know what? Carver still doesn't care. Because he's just like, whatever.
Is Carver the uncle?
I don't think so.
See, that would be an amazing twist if Carver was the uncle.
I don't
know. You just don't know about it. And the uncle was part of it, which was Carver, which was the cop, which is why he hasn't gave a fuck about this the entire time.
They give him a polygraph, but, you know, don't even get me started on how unreliable that is.
Yeah, who gives a
fuck? He does the whole thing where he tries to, like, fall asleep during the polygraph so that, like, it won't read him.
Oh my God.
So, like, basically it's inconclusive. But he was super weird and odd while he was doing it. So clearly, like what's he wrong with something. These people?
Yeah, well.
All right, so he basically has this weird blackout. He's obsessed with Misty. According to other kids, they're hanging out more than anyone thought. He doesn't have an alibi. Oh, and when they went to pick him up, he ran from the cops.
Of course he did.
Okay. So they let him go, because obviously. They say he's a person of interest, but that's it. And they never even try to, like, the uncle thing. They never even try to, like, basically confirm his alibis. Like, they just let it go. They're just like, okay, we looked into him. Now, that's it. Basically. And he lies to Diana again, at least according to one podcast I listened to, and I don't know how true this is, but he lies and tells her that he passed it, even though he clearly didn't.
Yeah.
But she's relentless. Like, she goes and talks to that to the Rodriguez guy, and he tells her that that's not basically true, and that the police are lying to her. Like, he tells her, he's like, no, I told police this, and da-da-da-da-da. And so she's just like, I'm done. Like, police around here. Now, They do focus on another suspect, and we'll talk about that in a second. But after the police investigate Ruben briefly here, right, mm-hmm. this half-assed investigation, he decides to go sell his 1974 Chevy Nova to a wrecking yard.
Okay, buy evidence.
So that, you know, it can never be searched. So, like I said, Trina keeps changing her story. Trina, listen, Trina. Trina got a ride that night. She didn't walk home. She got a ride from her 23-year-old boyfriend. We're all like, Ruben Schmidt's 18. 23-year-old Michael Reiner. 8 years older than her.
That's nuts. That's nuts.
And, like, they finally tell them, you know, that, you know, she got a ride with this guy. And he's got a sketchy past. I know, you're all so surprised. He had a juvenile rape charge.
Yeah, because he's dating a fucking 14-year-old.
And he had personal ties to both the other two missing girls.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. But this has taken so long to even get to this point. It's a miracle they even looked into it.
Oh, my God.
All right, I need to speed up here. All right. And they're still they're still publicly calling her a runaway, by the way. Like, that's still happening.
Jesus Christ.
But, like, she didn't, like, you know, so they talk to Trina, and they wonder if Michael drops Trina off and then went back and got Misty.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, Trina goes home. Like, we know that she gets home safely.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he, you know, in his sick, twisted mind saw Misty and went, yeah, I'm going to go back and get her. And she's going to be vulnerable because mm-hmm. she's, like,
alone.
Right. And he was trying to sell his car, too. A 1981 Ford Escort. Oh, boy.
Damn.
It wasn't in great condition, but he did sell it to an undercover police officer, which is pretty fun. And they found, forensics found samples of Misty's something. What the hell? Apparently, I didn't finish that sentence when I wrote it down.
Samples of Misty, period.
No, I think they were looking for samples. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But, hold on. Sorry, friends. Apparently, I didn't write something down, and I have to figure it out. Okay. They don't get anything. All right. I read the whole thing.
Okay.
They don't get anything. They do forensically try to look at his car to see if mm-hmm. there's anything. And they don't find anything. And he does pass the polygraph.
But do you know who they didn't do that to?
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But suspicious.
He does pass the polygraph. I'm not saying he's off my suspect list entirely. Because, yo, he's clearly a creep.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. But the only one left now, basically, is Ruben. Ed.
Bless you.
They are not doing anything about that. So
it's because his uncle's a fucking cop.
A year passes.
Sorry. Bless you.
Ugh. Sorry, friends. I apparently have allergies today. I mean, I have them every day, but apparently
today they're really kicking up.
They're like, they're happening. Okay, a year goes by, and nobody's talking about the case anymore, obviously. And, you know, the police did a good job of making no one talk about it because, you know, she's just a runaway.
Ooh, she's a little runaway. Bon Jovi? Nobody? Okay.
No, that was good. I was just trying to recover from that last sneeze still. Oh, man.
It's like my favorite Bon Jovi song, by the way.
Well, I mean,
Side note. I only ever had it on a record because I took it from somebody's basement.
I had a cassette.
I have a cassette now. I found it at a Goodwill. Anyway, but back then, all I could find it was on a vinyl. But thankfully, my parents had one of those really super old vinyl 8-track players, and I could listen. Anyway,
so a year later, they do start like looking into the case again.
Oh, okay.
And they finally go back and talk to the fucking roommate again.
Oh, my God.
right? Because, like, you need to talk to the roommate. So, apparently, Ruben's family had been kicked out of an apartment. So, him and his brothers moved in with this guy, James Tinsley, and his family. But Tinsley had been there, he'd been there the night that Misty disappeared, and unlike Ruben during his, you know, blackout, knows what happened. On September 17th, 1992, according to Tinsley, Ruben had a 13-year-old girlfriend at his house visiting when Misty called.
Oh my God.
Asking for a ride. And the 13-year-old girl got upset that Ruben was talking to another girl, which, oh my God, someone stop this. But anyway, she would leave, and then at this point, Tinsley says that after she left, Ruben left too and didn't return until after midnight that night.
Huh.
Didn't go to a party with his uncle. He just left after he had his other underage girl at the house.
Oh my God.
And he doesn't, he told, like, this roommate, this guy who lives with him, is like, I definitely can see him doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had a temper, he was easily, like, pissed off, like,
oh my God.
Like, he's like, I have no doubts that, like, he could have done this. Yeah. Now, he doesn't have any proof, but he doesn't, yeah. like, as a, he's not going, but he's a good guy, he would never hurt him. He's not saying that. And, like, you know things about people you live with. So they bring him in again, and he gets questioned again. He won't take another, first he won't take another polygraph, but he does eventually, and he changes his statement slightly, saying that he did go out that night, but he went to his grandmother's farm during, and then, you know, blacked out, and then was there, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, okay.
Instead of the next morning, he went.
But he didn't have any guests.
Right!
Gotta keep going back to that.
I know. He did pass the polygraph this time, but that means nothing.
It doesn't.
Y'all, that polygraphs are the... Oh, my God.
You just have to believe what you're saying to be true. That's all.
But this is the last time he'll ever be investigated.
Aww.
This is it. It's the end. So, he's off the suspect list. No, because he passes the polygraph, which, I mean, like... So, in this point, old Herm goes back to Diana and treats her like a suspect. Even though she was with this elderly woman, her job.
Right. Like, the entire night.
Anyway, he brings her in for questioning. He makes her take a polygraph.
And why would she disrobe her own daughter?
He interviews her former... She had, like, you know, like I said, the DUIs and the other stuff. So yeah. She has a parole officer. He's just digging on her, like... And she passes her polygraph. But he tells other people that she was lying. Including Jim Doyen. This detective that, you know, she got to help her.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they think that they're the ones... Like I said, he's always thought that they planted the pants. That they had it, they planted it. Anyway, it's just so fucked up. Like, I don't need to get into any more of this. I'm going to skip ahead a minute. But they're just... Like, this guy just has it out for her.
Yeah.
And I get that the... Corey Bober dude is not helping.
Right.
Because it's like two things together that are really just, you know.
Not the same thing.
And he's like making a thing of this. But Bober didn't, and they wanted Bober to take a polygraph, and he wouldn't, which because he's smart, because he's like, they're just going to use it to frame my, make me look guilty.
Right.
Which is exactly what they were going to do. And so nothing happens. And they're still saying she's a runaway. So, 1996, a story starts circulating that, like, I don't know why this is circulating, that she would call her parents when she turns 18.
What?
Like, and apparently, Pulley Up Police now had, like, pulled in the dad out of nowhere.
Okay.
Like, Buck's back in the picture. And, like, I don't know, like, they made this media stunt about it, like, that she would call to prove them right, basically. Well, she never calls, because she's probably fucking dead.
Oh, my God.
So, and then, they're still after this Corey Bober guy, like, they fucking, bust him again on marijuana charges. I mean, we're like years later, I get it, but like, and I mean, he is a weed dealer, so like, but I mean, a lot of people think it's just to get him to like, you know, shut up.
Yeah.
He did try to get the forensic results back from Misty's pants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, personally, like a freedom, well, it probably wasn't called a FOIA request back then, but like, he's trying to like get someone to tell them what's in the report.
Yeah.
Anyway, he does find that there were hairs and fibers along with 3 red paint chips.
Weird.
Now, if we go back to our car situation.
Camaro guy,
yeah. But for Bober, Achazar had a red Porsche, his main suspect for the
back-to-bad
again.
Yeah.
So, which, I mean, it's great they found the paint chips, but it's also bad because Bober spirals further down his path.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's another incident I said earlier with that Robert Leslie Hickey who had the red Camaro.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Another woman has an incident in 2001 where tries to like, you know, pull her into her car, but this is where like 2001 she has a cell phone, so she's like dialing 911.
Yeah.
And he basically like leaves her because he saw her dial 911. And she goes home and calls the police, and he's arrested and convicted of attempted second degree rape. And he's sent to prison this time because it's his second serious offense for life. Like, he's not getting out this time, thank God. It only took how many women?
I know, right?
But
how many decades?
So a lot of people have, like, questioned him as a suspect because of those paint samples.
Mm-hmm.
And he's clearly a serial offender.
Right.
Like, he's doing this. And he's in that area. So, you know, he is also a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
So, also in 2001, and I'm sorry, Bober, I knew this the whole time, but the actual Green River Killer is arrested. Gary Ridgway is the Green River Killer, despite the fact that this Corey Bober guy will spend the rest of his life trying to prove that he isn't.
Yeah, oh my God.
And, I mean, Ridgway confesses. Like, once he's caught, he just
unleashes. It all comes out, yeah.
Now, Ridgway has killed so many people that he doesn't remember all of them.
Oh my God.
So, like, nobody really thinks he killed these 3 girls.
Right.
He's never linked directly to the 3 girls. And I keep saying that Misty's part of that, but I feel like she is in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But, or that they're not connected. It's really up in the air. And I'll talk about that a little at the end if I have time. I'm almost done. But Gary Ridgway is never connected to those cases.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He had a type. It was prostitutes.
Yeah.
Like, he had a very specific, like, M.O.
Yeah.
And these 3 are similar, but not
similar enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, and they're not able to connect him. And he did take a plea deal to help them find some bodies. So, like, he was able, like, he saved himself from getting murdered, like, a death sentence, which is, like, whatever. But he did, you know, provide closure to families in the sense that he found, like, he showed them where some of the bodies were. So, like, people feel like if he was involved in this, he would have, he would have said.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't trying to make him sound sympathetic. That sounded
He
was providing closure to families. No, but, like, my point is he would have said something. He would have let them know. Anyway, like I said, this does not change poor Corey's mind, and he will literally spend the rest of his life just dedicated to, like,
proving them wrong.
Randy Achazar guy. In 2000, Diana had Misty legally declared dead, and they had a funeral for her. And like I said, Bober then kind of focused on his Achazar thing. Achazar, whatever the hell that guy, that fucking name.
I think it's Ock, like
Achazar.
Ochsinger.
Ochsinger?
Like, it's German. Where is it? I just looked at it. Yeah, Ochsiger.
Ochsiger. I've been saying it wrong the whole episode. Yeah.
It's probably like a German name, so it's Och.
Probably, yeah. You're right.
Sounds like you're hawking a loogie.
Now that you say that, I'm like, I don't know why I didn't think that. But anyway, he still's got those, like, you know, the red paint samples, and he's still trying to convince people that this guy, you know, maybe killed the girls. But,
well, do you know what? You know what I don't understand about the red paint samples? Is like, okay, so each car manufacturer has their own types of red. So, like, the whatever, like, the molecular components of making that one specific color is different for every manufacturer. Well, so why couldn't they just do that?
The crappy thing is they're gone.
What?
They've been lost.
Oh, of course.
I was just gonna get to that. Cause yeah, like with, especially now with modern technology, like we should be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
But they're gone. No one knows where they are. And this is all because the police just did not care about this case from the get-go.
Did the one cop drive a red car? Does anybody know?
I don't know, we should find out.
Yes. I agree. He's suspicious the whole time.
As I said, a lot of people questioned Corey Boebert as the potential guy. Yeah. But he had an alibi. A solid alibi that night. Like,
nah, I don't think he did it.
He was assaulted by a neighbor that night.
That's beautiful.
I know.
Beautiful.
And then he was, you know, filing a police report. So, like, he was engaged. I mean, that's a good alibi.
He was fucking preoccupied.
He got his ass beat because he's really fucking annoying.
He was cops the whole time.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but he, like, it's so funny to me that that's his alibi.
Yeah, no.
And he's never had a car in his entire life.
Makes sense.
Or a driver's license or anything. Mm-hmm. The hair samples were tested a few years ago. But they didn't find any matches in any databases.
Because it's a cop. I'm just kidding.
No,
the
he
cop
would be
have
in
red
the,
hair.
He would be in the database.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, they, yeah, they do that.
Well, who the fuck had red hair?
No, red samples was the no. I don't know what color the hair was.
Okay, my bad.
But you know, at the same time, like, I don't know. Anyway, the hairs don't match, but that stuff had been there for a while. Like, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Like I said, time has passed, so they still are investigating this crime occasionally. But they did relaunch an investigation, and they found an old tip. Like I said, tips were coming in, but never really followed up on. And they found this old tip that Misty had gotten in a car with an older man who was driving a yellow Chrysler Cordoba. This man was in his 30s and had a prior history of sexual assault to young women.
Oh, Jesus.
And he was a person, like, the person knew who this was. Because he had personal and professional ties to this town.
Uh-huh.
So when they, like, they made it, like, this tip was totally ignored back when it was originally brought in 93. But, like, they never investigated it. In 2000, old Ruben was arrested for theft and did a small stint in prison. And then later in 2006, he got a domestic violence, or a PFA from his wife, because he beat her. So, you know, he's not a good dude either. So we've got all of this, like, stuff that just keeps happening to these people, but nobody ever comes forward with anything about Misty. There is an article that popped up in December of 2015 on a UK website, and he claimed to be a relative of Ruben Schmidt and stated that the family was always aware that he was involved and that his uncles were there and also responsible. And his uncle was the one in the yellow Chrysler Cordoba.
So professional ties to the town.
Which, I don't know why I don't know who this uncle is.
But at the same time, why, if they had, he had professional ties to the town, it makes him sound like maybe he had, like, they're kind of well off, so why were they living randomly with a,
yeah,
with, like, a, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyway, Diana's moved on as much as she can, and, you know, she still thinks it's Ruben. She's never not thought it was Ruben. She's always been suspicious of him. I feel like Ruben's a really strong suspect. Mm-hmm. I feel like I want to know who actually was in that yellow Cordoba.
I don't understand about Ruben, though, is if he's already having some, obviously he's having some sort of a relationship with this girl, why would he just randomly murder her? I don't understand.
I don't know. Because, they're saying because he has a temper.
I mean, I get that, but he's really, I think he likes her. Yeah. And, like, he's getting something from her. I don't know,
maybe she found out about the other 13-year-old and got mad and, like...
Well, I don't know.
I know. I mean, like, there's not a lot of motive. I agree with you. There's not a ton of motive. Mm-mm. Other than, like, something stupid happened. I mean, at this point, it could have been an accident. We've never found a body.
Unless he took his uncle and his uncle did it and it got out of hand.
It got out of hand. Yeah. Like, I think that, you know, I don't think that... our German friend has anything to do with it. I think this guy was obsessed. But, you know, so the good and the bad of that was that he at least did help her get attention to the case.
Yeah.
Because I feel pretty strongly that if he had not involved himself, mm-hmm. it would have just been her toiling alone and nothing would have actually happened. Now, not to say that she wasn't, you know, like, looking into it herself, but when the police basically tell you, no,
yeah.
your daughter isn't missing, she's a runaway, and that's that.
Which also makes me question why the police so adamantly were trying to not help.
And
to me, that's suspicious.
It is suspicious, but I think also it becomes part of this whole scenario where maybe if Bober wasn't involved, the police wouldn't have taken such a hard line, because he was a thorn in their side. He drove them crazy. He had had prior interactions with that Herm guy prior to Misty's case because of the Green River Killer.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is just annoying to them.
But at the same time, maybe, even prior to Bober, the police were like, nope, she's a runaway, we're not helping you.
I know.
They were just very dismissive of it.
They might have not held on to it so strongly, though. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's all very interesting.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was one of those cases, as I kept reading, I'm like, and then this happened!
And then,
I'm sorry, an hour in, but...
it's all right.
Anyway, that's my fair case.
Well, I'm going to have to save mine for next week, because I have to go.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Mine's short, but I'm not going to be able to get through it, and yeah, we have to be somewhere at 10, so
okay.
I have to go. All right, friends.
You get one case this week.
I mean, it was a long one, so I mean, it's basically two.
That's true.
Your moms love you.
Bye.
Bye.